Hey there, welcome back for another episode of Talkin' Winter Ops. I'm Rick Nelson, and the question of the day is, just how do you know you're getting what you paid for when it comes to de-icing chemicals? Now, the easy answer, you test it, but when you start diving into the various tests, what they tell you, and can you get repeatable results, things get a lot more complicated. The folks at the Nebraska Department of Transportation started working on a way to determine the ice melting capacity of liquid de-icers in an easy-to-run, inexpensive, and repeatable test back in 2009. And 15 years later, their dedication and a little help from a Clear Roads Pooled Fund study project have taken this test method from a master's thesis project to an AASHTO provisional test method. Mike Madison and Jasmine Donlinger at the Nebraska DOT tell all when it comes to this test and why it should be one you run on your liquid de-icers right after this. The Winter Weather Management Technical Service Program and Season 7 of Talkin' Winter Ops is here because of the support from AASHTO's Maintenance Committee and state DOTs out there who make a voluntary contribution every year to financially support our TSP. Without the support from those states, we wouldn't be able to provide you with the resources to help you achieve your winter maintenance mission. Here's a special shout out to those states who support the Winter Weather Management TSP. So, Mike Madison, Jasmine Donlinger, Nebraska DOT, how are you guys this morning?
Good, Rick. Thanks for inviting us.
The sky is blue and the birds are singing in Nebraska today after that massive snowstorm you've got, right?
The birds have been going to the feeder at a phenomenal rate because they've been very hungry.
Yeah. Mike, how long have you been at the Nebraska DOT?
I'm coming up on my 20th anniversary next month.
Wow. I bet it seems like just yesterday, huh?
I never thought it would be this long.
It was a temporary gig that turned into 20 years.
Isn't that something? That is kind of how it works, yeah.
Mike, what do you do there at the Nebraska DOT?
Currently, I am the winter maintenance engineer. And so I work on performance measures. I work on the setup and training and administration of our MDSS products and evaluation of de-icing chemicals. So equipment, kind of all things winter maintenance. I don't get too much into the minute-by-minute operations. It's more of the long-term planning type of things.
Okay. Jasmine, what about you? How long have you been with the Nebraska DOT?
So in April, I will have been with Nebraska DOT for 18 years.
Wow. So yes. Wow. And what do you do there?
So actually this month will be 17 years of managing the chemistry lab in the materials and research division.
Okay. So your background is in chemistry.
I have a bachelor's of science in chemistry. Yes. And we do lots of different things in the chemistry lab. We're one of seven labs in the division. And I wear a lot of hats as far as like testing goes. So, you know, wintertime, we're doing a lot of de-icer testing. In the summertime, we do a lot of traffic paint and glass bead testing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and that's sort of what we're here to talk about today is de-icers. And what kind of tests do you normally run on de-icers?
So we really just mainly test liquids. Our big ones are pH. We'll do some specific gravity. We do settleable solids. We do for our mag chloride-based de-icers, we do active ingredient test. And so we test for magnesium chloride. We do the ice melting capacity test that we'll talk about here. Mm-hmm. And we do corrosion.
Corrosion. You know, when you think about salt, I mean, salt is salt, right? Sodium chloride is sodium chloride. And it sounds like the tests that you run are, you know, like, is it clean? Is it dry? You know, and that sort of thing. And the testing is really important. And, you know, I just kind of have to wonder the extent that other agencies really do testing on their de-icing chemicals. Do you have a feel for that? I mean, is that something that's up there with like traffic paint and those other kinds of products?
Well, or? I get the feeling that Nebraska does more quality assurance testing than other states. I don't know that for a fact. I get the feeling there. And like I said, we mainly do liquid testing. We don't do a whole lot of solid testing. But our liquid program is very robust. We do a lot. We sample every single load of liquids that's delivered. And so we have that on hand. So if we start seeing any kind of, you know, failures in anything, we have the ability to essentially test everything if we absolutely need to, which I hope not. You know, we've never had to deal with that in my time here.
Well, it seems like in liquids, there's a lot more opportunity for other things to get mixed in there than with a solid product.
Yeah. And it seems like year to year, there's always kind of something that's just off, and it takes a while to kind of get it fixed out, whether it's some settleable solids issues or whether there's a corrosion issue or something. We did have one fantastic winter season. I think it was maybe 3 years ago, 4 years ago. Everything passed. Everything met spec. We didn't have any issues. It was fantastic. But unfortunately, you know, that's not the norm.
You mentioned the ice melting capacity test. There's lots of discussion. It seems like whenever you get a couple of winter maintenance folks together, there's always this discussion about ice melting and how well it works.
It's a good point. Up until we started having this ice melting capacity test, most of what we were testing was more characteristic type testing. You know, just verifying the product is what it is, not verifying it does what it's supposed to do.
Okay.
So,
And is that what sort of drove this idea of a new ice melting capacity test?
It is, Rick. Back in 2009, we had a proposal that I was involved with to come up with an ice melt evaluation, some kind of testing for that. We didn't know what it would be at the time. Barb Gurbino Bivens and Professor Chris Twan from UNL came to us with some ideas, and I kind of tossed one out offhand and said, what if we just put some ice in a container with a liquid de-icer and shook it for a while and saw how much ice melted? You know, that'd be kind of like what happens on the road with traffic and stuff.
Right.
And Barb took off with that and did a lot of other tests as well. She did the sharp tests and some kind of real world tests and some analysis using MDSS. It was very extensive. But the shaker test is the thing that it became the rocker test later after development, the ice melting capacity test, and was intended and is still intended, at least in my mind, primarily as a quality test where you can compare one product or one batch of a product to the next and see that it performs the same way. It is not done at constant temperature because as the chemical begins to melt the ice, the temperature drops in the container. This is a well-known effect. It's an endothermic process. And so the temperature goes down, and we limit the length of the test to see what happens in that initial 15 minutes time period. It's kind of a critical time period of what's going on when we've got kind of the full concentration and we're melting as much as it can melt during that first 15 minutes. I think Jasmine has done a lot more work with this since then, run hundreds of tests in the lab. But I think that concept has remained pretty constant, that we're looking to compare. And by doing those comparisons, we can see if there's a difference between them.
Mm-hmm. So when you make those comparisons, is it like to evaluate, you know, one product versus another, or is it, so it's like, is it a qualitative thing or is it a quantitative thing?
Good question. It I think to some extent can be used to compare one product to another. And certainly under the same circumstances, these very controlled circumstances, it can be. One of the things that I think is difficult with any of the lab tests we do is to compare them with field performance, because the conditions in the field are so variable and they change even, you know, from the time that you put a chemical on until you would want to evaluate it later. Your temperature may have gone up or down, the amount of precipitation, right, traffic, there's just a myriad of things that can affect that. So lab tests are always kind of a generalization or a qualitative relationship to real world results. But there's also been a lot of studies on that side of things. So when we start putting the two together, I think we find that the rocker test, the ice melting capacity test that we're talking about here, has the primary advantage of being repeatable and fast and relatively economical. Pretty inexpensive to do. Is that right, Jasmine?
That's correct. That's one of the big benefits of this test is it's very easy to set up. Almost all the materials are probably something you either have already in the lab, like a pipette, or something maybe you even have at home, like an ice cube tray or a chest freezer. You know, you can just buy at Home Depot. So I think the most difficult material that we had to acquire was the rocker itself. But there are options out there with any lab, you know, equipment supplier.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, and it's like, I remember, you know, I hate to keep going back in the day, right? But when you wanted to try to evaluate a couple of different de-icers, you know, you do some field trials in the winter and you try to pick a couple of places that were somewhat similar and you tell this crew to apply this material and that one to apply that other material. And hopefully, cross your fingers, you'd get some snow, right? Because that was the easiest way to guarantee an easy winter, a snow-free winter, was to plan some de-icing tests, right? And so, I mean, being able to go into the lab and having an idea about how these different materials are going to perform before you know, either buy a lot of them or you make this change, I think that's a really important concept.
Yes, it is.
You mentioned the Sharp test. What's the Sharp test? And is that what this ice melting capacity test is trying to either replace or compete against?
Well, Jasmine may have a better answer than I do, but initially we looked at the Sharp test and just found that it was, and the Sharp test we're talking about was an ice melting test. So it required some equipment that was maybe not as readily available. And it seemed like the repeatability of it just was not very good. It was really hard to do.
So essentially what that test was is you would take kind of a bigger Petri dish. I think it's like maybe 6 to 8 inches. Like, I don't know the details of that, but you'd freeze water in it. So you'd get just like an ice puck. And then you would take a syringe and you would dispense a certain amount of the de-icer, whether it's liquid or solid. A solid, you wouldn't use the syringe, but you would put a certain amount on there. You let it sit. I think it was 60 minutes. And after that time, you would take that syringe and you would try and suck up any liquid. And so, you know, when you get like kind of cavities forming in that ice, it makes it, you know, more difficult to get in there and it takes more time. And so if you're not, you know, bent over, got your whole body in the freezer, you know, you've taken it out. And so now you've got that room temperature that's going to start melting the ice as well. And so there was a lot of variability in the results when Barb did that test. And I think that was kind of almost used maybe as a baseline. Okay, here's the variability we're seeing with the established test. And now, you know, can we take this new test where we're evaluating and is that improved?
Yeah. And so what you would do with that is you'd suck up the liquids and that would be the measure of the ice melting capacity of that particular
Correct.
Chemical. So the idea was to come up with a test method that was a bit more repeatable, was a little bit easier to run. And
so you know, trying to, you know, when you're making a change to something, one of the things that you want to, you know, try to accomplish is, can you make it easier? I can go mm-hmm. through, you know, just very, very simply of how this test works. So, excuse me. So it's a two-day test. Really, the first day, you have to prep all your materials. So you make your ice cubes. Then you put your de-icer in.
Now, these are like ice cubes, yeah. right? Like you put in a nice, fine Scotch whiskey kind of, if you're into that, right? I mean, that I don't want to go there. Some people say yes and some people say no, but we're talking like just an ice cube, right?
Yeah,
like
they're small. They're the procedure calls for 1.3 mils per ice cube. So they're pretty tiny, but you go to Amazon and you can buy the little ice cube trays. So we put our distilled water in those ice cube trays, put in the freezer, so those can get frozen overnight. And we put our de-icer in a thermos, and this is just any, you know, vacuum sealed thermos that you can, you know, buy at the grocery store or Walmart or wherever. And you put that in the freezer overnight, so to kind of just acclimate to that starting temperature. And for any kind of non-sodium chloride products, so whether it's mag chloride, calcium chloride, those are at 0 degrees. If you're doing a sodium chloride-based de-icer, we tested at 15 degrees. So put that in the freezer. And then the second day, we measure out 33 ice cubes. We weigh them very quickly because we don't want to start that melting. We have a time frame we're aiming for. I believe it's about 30 seconds. And then we put that into the thermos with the de-icer that's in there. Put the lid on nice and tight. And then the rocker is on our laboratory counter. And we put that on there and we set the timer for 15 minutes. After 15 minutes, we dump everything that's in there, ice and liquid and everything, over a sieve. So then the sieve catches the ice cubes that still are there that aren't melted. We collect those very quickly, weigh them again. And we basically take what the ice cubes weighed before the test, what the ice cubes weigh after the test, do the math, subtract that out, we get the difference, and divide by the amount of de-icer that we use, which is 30 mils. And that's the result. So the math is really easy. So equipment's easy to get. The procedure, you know, talking with my staff who've done it a lot, you know, their feedback is this is really, it's easy to do, it's easy to follow, it's easy to calculate.
This is mostly with respect to liquid de-icers, right? Because if you put a solid de-icer in there, of course, you would have to wait for the solid to start melting the liquid and the timing sort of gets funky, right? Is that fair to say?
Yes. Yeah, that this hasn't been evaluated for solids at this time.
When the initial martini shaker test was done, Barb did do some work with solids. They were pre-wet solids. So with a little pre-wet material on there to begin, she got some results, but it was, I think it was much more difficult to get consistency because of the basically the shape factor of the solids also is part of it. Mm-hmm. So
right.
We've basically considered it to be a test for liquids.
Okay. So you talked about the martini shaker. I like the way this conversation is going, right? We've gone from scotch to martinis. Were you talking like a regular, like a tumbler kind of? I mean, was that a switch, if you will, to go from that to a thermos or an insulated?
Yes. Container? Well, the original martini shaker was insulated with some foam insulation kind of duct taped around it to insulate. Mm-hmm. So the next step after that, and there were thermocouples that were put through there to check the temperature over time and things like that, that we don't do now because that's already established. So, so going with the thermos is a simple way to get it's what's called an adiabatic process. We don't, in this particular test, we're not looking for a constant temperature. we're looking for no heat transfer. So all of the melting done by the chemical from the starting point, it's going to get colder inside of the container. And to some extent, that happens when you put it on the road too, to a much less extent because of the scale of magnitude. But this gives us a way to compare under identical conditions without having to control for anything other than the starting temperature.
Right. And if you're making these comparisons under the same conditions, it's like you sort of factor all that stuff out, right? It's like what happens on one side of the equation is happening on the other side.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? So, Mike, what's the history of this test? You know, you talked about you went to UNL, University of Nebraska at Lincoln.
Correct.
Right? And when did this, what's been the journey? What's been the road that this test method has taken to get us to today?
From the initial proposal in 2009, it was Barb's master's thesis. And 2 years later, it was complete in 2011 and was published in, I've got it right here. I think it's the November 2012 issue of the Journal of Testing and Evaluation.
Okay. Who's this Barb?
Barb Gurbino.
Jasmine, you've mentioned Barb a couple of times. Now Mike's mentioned Barb. Who's this mysterious Barb?
Barb Gurbino Bevins, who was a master's student at the time at the University of Nebraska. And she is now the district construction engineer in Omaha. So she's made a great deal of progress in her career, and it's because she is very talented and very hard worker and does wonderful work. So, you know, she's the reason that we have been able to get this going.
Absolutely. And I don't know if I just want to add here that she started even plowing, like when she was done with her master's, she started plowing snow, and she, you know, worked herself up, you know, so she's just great. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, you know what, that's what they say about winter maintenance, right? Once you get into it, it's like, you just can't get away from it.
So,
okay. So Mike, sorry, I derailed you there. But I thought it was important that we know who this Barb was, since she started this whole process.
Absolutely. Yeah. After that part, that initial project was complete, a second phase was started to develop the test into something that was not a human being shaking. I actually have videos of Barb shaking the martini shaker and put it to music, and we had it for a innovation ceremony. Anyway, I digress. We then went through another phase of development with several other students that worked for Professor Tuan and began doing the work in Jasmine's lab. So Jasmine was much more involved at that point in helping to coach these students as they took a lot of measurements, tried different things, and we got to where we used a rocker table, a lab shaker, if you will, and the thermos, and really kind of developed the method, the test method. And at the end of that project, it kind of sat for a while. And Ty Barger came to the department from... He actually was in the Marines, was retired from the Marines, and had worked for City of Lincoln and did de-icing work with them, came to the department and was on the Clear Roads pooled fund. He was our technical panel member, and discovered the rocker test or the ice melting capacity test, and began talking with Jasmine about it. And I'll let Jasmine kind of take it from there.
Yeah, so Ty had come to me and I, you know, being at the Clear Roads rep at that time, you know, he wanted to, you know, I guess, you know, help out and contribute and how he could help things and benefit, you know, things here, even in, especially in Nebraska. And he asked me, what would be helpful for you, you know? And I told him, you know, our agency was really looking to utilize this method. You know, we went through all this research with the university. We want to, you know, we got some good results out of it. We want to start using it in our state. And in my mind, if it can be more than just a test that Nebraska uses, it can benefit, you know, a lot more people. And we had already started doing some method validation in-house, and we were partnering with, we had an independent lab that we were partnering with, and then two of the vendors that we work with to do a round robin. And so they're kind of aware of this new test and very, very supportive of it. They were very excited about this. And so knowing that we were getting some industry support, that was kind of almost a head start. And so I told Ty, if we can get this as a nationally recognized test method, whether it's ASHTO, whether it's just a ClearRoads test method, because ClearRoads has some of those, you know, whatever it is, if we can get this out there and more people using it, it'll be helpful for us. And so that spring of 2018, he proposed that as a ClearRoads research project, and it was selected. And it's we're almost at the finish line, you know, at this point. And so during that time, you know, as Mike said, after that second phase, we had pretty much the method almost exactly where it is at this point. We just needed to do a lot more testing and verify that we have that repeatability, we have that reproducibility. And by doing the round robin testing, we did those, you know, through NDOT. And then there were also round robin tests through the ClearRoads project. And so got a lot of data from that. In the meantime, Nebraska moved forward with utilizing this test method for our own quality assurance program. And when we went out to bid for our mag chloride de-icers in the fall of 2020, and we took those bid samples that we got in and we did the test, and we didn't use this as a criteria to award a bid. We didn't use it for that purpose, but we used it to kind of establish what, when we do quality assurance testing during the lifetime of the contract, what values are we kind of looking for? And we're also using this to, you know, get more data using this new test method. And to date, we have reported over 300 ice melting capacity results. And, you know, I looked at the data and they're very close. We've got some very good consistent data.
So you mentioned that you're not using this as a metric to award a bid, but I just want to be sure I'm getting this straight, right? But you're running the same test on the material as it's delivered through the life of the contract to make sure that what you thought you were getting at the beginning is what you're getting at through the course of the contract and even towards the end.
And so when those bid samples, we measured them, we got a value. We didn't want to set that value as the minimum because, you know, a lot of suppliers, when they go to bid, they're going to send you their, you know, greatest version of their product. And so I guess it was probably arbitrarily picked, but we went with 70% of that value would be our minimum for each product separately. So so that's what we've held them to. I haven't had anything even come close to that. They've been very close to that bid sample.
Mm-hmm. Now, the vendors, they know that this is going to be a criteria that they're going to have to meet when they sell materials to the Nebraska DOT.
They do. And I believe we have pay factors even in place. So they're aware. So if they don't meet that, there will be, you know, a consequence.
Okay. And I think that's probably why it's, I mean, there's some importance to having an independent lab involved, a test method that's standardized. So the vendors can run the tests themselves. You can go to a third party lab if there's a dispute or whatever, however that might come to be.
Yeah, there was a lot of, like, when we did our method validation in-house. So we have a research section here in my division, And they really, they were really in charge of that. My lab, we supported the effort, gave feedback, you know, on what anything, any observations, you know, that we had. And that section was Lee Eskahalsey and Dave Hansen, which it's out there in some publications. And I worked with Dave a lot, and Dave did some fantastic statistical analysis to, you know, verify that we're getting that repeatability, we're getting that reproducibility, because we didn't want to be running a test that we didn't have any confidence in. And so, you know, the numbers we got were very confident in that we're using it.
So, Mike, from a winter maintenance engineer's perspective, what does this test do for you?
Well, first and foremost, it provides us with a method to validate our samples. So we know that we're getting material that is going to work as intended, or as it should. Mm-hmm. And I think we're not there yet, really, but at a future point, if we can correlate this a little more closely with real world applications, with field performance, it may be a way to actually do some comparisons between different chemicals, different suppliers. So as you well know, the different suppliers have proprietary blends, and they're doing this to make things work better. There are anti-corrosives that are put in, corrosion inhibitors, and other ingredients to enhance the performance. So I guess we could generically call them performance enhancers. So we've got a lot of different materials that may claim to have certain benefits. And at some point, we may be able to have that correlation between this test and the field performance over a range of conditions. So we may look at doing some work at more temperatures than we are, you know, do some things in those areas. And there are a lot of other tests that are being developed in this same area that, you know, I don't know whether any of them are as simple to do as this one, which is one of the great things about it. But that in the end game, of course, it's field performance is what matters to us. You know, we're looking for value. We want something that really performs and is also cost effective.
You know, when you talk about, you know, as you were talking about field performance and that sort of thing, a thought that sort of flashed into my mind had to do with application rates, right? Now, when you run this test, the ice melting capacity, Jasmine, you say you it's a difference in the weight over the volume or the amount of material that you've put into the thermos, right? So it's kind of a volumetric measurement kind of thing, right? And so I'm thinking, okay, if you know what the performance is in the thermos, and I'm thinking about what Mike was saying about real world performance. I mean, is there an opportunity to sort of put some science behind what an appropriate application rate might be versus we tried this much and it worked good, so we're going to stay with that?
Potentially. I mean, you know, I don't get as much involved in the, you know, the application rates and those types of things. But, you know, if there's so many, you know, gallons per lane mile, you know, and they want to kind of switch that up, I mean, that's something where in theory you could, the equation is easy enough in the test that you could say, instead of doing 30 mils of de-icer, which is how the test is written, maybe you do 40 or 50 mils, you know, with the same amount of ice cubes. And so that would maybe represent a different application rate. I don't know, Mike, am I going the right direction? I don't know.
Yeah. In fact, that's another part of exactly what I was talking about, different temperatures, different application rates. So we can make those kind of observations. And as you well know, Rick, and everybody in this business that's been in it for any length of time, I can say every storm is, and you can finish the sentence.
Right.
Different. Right. And they are. And there are so many factors that go into it. But yet we've got to have some kind of a rationale for how we deal with it. And so what an application rate is, and should it be different for different products? I think the answer is yes, but if they have the same active ingredient, do they perform differently? People in the field will say that they do. And, you know, I take that with a grain of salt, pun intended, because it's hard to do the science. It's hard to make observations where you've really taken into account all of the factors that make a difference. So what we look to do, and what actually Barb did, you know, over 10 years ago, is to try to gather some field data and enough of it that you can begin to make some comparisons under similar conditions. So we're trying to do things like that. And it's not a quick process, but we think that one way to approach it is if we can take a lot of field evaluations that we have reasonably good data, that we know what the conditions really were, and begin to make comparisons. Maybe there's something we can work with there.
Yeah.
But this test gives us something that's objective, that we've got things very controlled. So under very well-known conditions, we can make those comparisons. And if we don't see a difference from one to the next, then we'd have to see, you know, why would it be different in the field?
Right. But I'll tell you, it would be a perfect starting point. You know, if somebody came to you with a new product and said, "Hey, this is the next greatest thing since we started slicing bread," it's like, let's go to the rocker test and let's see how it shakes out, right?
Nice.
Exactly.
So we've been at this now for what, 15 years? And what's left to get this across the finish line to be a standard test method?
Well, you know, I like your we taught the finish line and everything. Like, this has been kind of the relay, you know, Mike kind of started it. Now I'm the anchor. Okay. And I looked this up. The anchor is supposed to be the fastest one. And I feel like I failed miserably.
No.
The very end.
Getting something put in as a standard is quite
a process. And it's been a good learning experience. So, you know, I think we talked at our last Pyros meeting that this is all really good info on. So if there's ever a procedure in the future that we would like to look at getting it ASHTO approved or adopted, we kind of have an idea now. This has kind of been a blueprint for what we would need to do. I look back at the timeline of everything, and all the testing got done like the fall of 22, I believe. Mm-hmm. And, or no, it was the fall of 21. I don't know. Somewhere in there. It was a while ago. And the kind of the last steps were just like a ruggedness test or ruggedness testing of the test. And that just kind of means, mm-hmm. you know, how much can you kind of alter the test a little bit and not really have a big effect on the results that you're getting? Because you're going to have lots of different people with different skill levels, different laboratories, slightly different equipment. You know, you want all those differences to be okay and not heavily affect the results that you're getting. And so did that, like with the ice cubes, the thermos sizes, you know, those types of things, and got very good results. Mm-hmm. No significant issues with our results. And so once that was done, in 2022, we initiated the bid to ASHTO to see if they would, you know, adopt this as a procedure. And that summer, we proposed it to the Committee on Maintenance first. And that was a little stressful for me because for whatever reason that day, I don't know why it was in summer, I had to be home for something and I had to lock myself in the room. And I told my kids, just be quiet for 5 minutes. It's supposed to only take me 5 minutes. And, you know, of course they start fighting and someone came to the door and the dog started barking. And I just like, I hoped none of that was true. And I got off the phone and I'm like, boy, I hope I didn't blow this, you know, and fortunately the committee, you know, approved it all. They passed it on to committee 5C for quality assurance and environmental. And they did some discussion. They did get a couple, negative kind of comments back. The main thing was really just the formatting of the, so it was paperwork essentially. Mm-hmm. We got all that fixed. And then, so that committee was all good, but they still needed to go through the concurrent balloting. So all of the AASHTO voting members, and that happened, and I did get confirmation. They had 42 affirmatives, no negatives, and 11 no votes. So good. It will be published as a provisional test method this summer. So once that's great. Published, then we kind of cross that finish line. And it's provisional in that we really need more people to be testing it. We need more people to be using it, giving feedback to it, any feedback, because we want to make it better if there's opportunity mm-hmm. for that.
For this test, you know, it's like Jasmine, you mentioned, there's not that many DOTs that seem to be running these tests on de-icers. They just accept it, you know? And I think if we can get the word out there that, hey, here's an easy test, you can get a feel for how well it's supposed to be working. You know, I think we've done our job and try to encourage people to use it. And it's going to take your guys, Mike, it's going to take the people that run in your circle, in the winter maintenance circle, to say, hey, we want to run this test and see how our de-icers are doing.
Yeah.
So I don't know if you, how much you deal with AASHTO Resource, like if you're affiliated or anything with those guys at all. Cause they're the ones that manage the proficiency mm-hmm. sample programs. And you know, we're trying to get the winter maintenance one kind of out of the gate, and we're going to do a trial launch. I think I'm expecting samples mm-hmm. honestly any day. And that was something that I'm probably going to see if Greg can't let me speak at this a little bit in April, because I know there's a lot of support for this. Like a lot of vendors want to be able, because it really gives your lab a report card, right? Decides, you know, how well are you doing the testing. And John and Ryan with AASHTO Resource, they were really struggling to get responses back. Mm-hmm. Like for this. And I don't, you know, I know like the vendors that I deal with, they are very excited about it. They're ready to go. They're going to participate. I don't have the contacts for some of these other companies. And when I'm just trying to call up their general number on the website, nobody knows what I'm talking about. I'm like, I just want to talk to the lab person and they don't know what I'm talking about. So this test, I'm hoping that eventually this test could be incorporated into mm-hmm. that as well. But at this point, there's just not enough people doing this test yet.
Mike, any last minute thoughts? Try to get your colleagues to start using this new test method?
Rick, I want to just say thank you for giving us the opportunity to talk about this topic. The business of winter maintenance and the de-icing materials that we use is pretty huge. And there are a lot of impacts to it, from highway safety and mobility to corrosion and the effects that has on our infrastructure and on our vehicles. So if we can work with a test that gives us the right amount to use to get of the right chemical at the right time. That's kind of the holy grail, or the trifecta, is the right chemical at the right time in the right amount. And if we do that and we don't overuse and waste materials, and if we don't underuse and not get results that give us the performance that we need, then we've really done our job well. And I believe this is a tool. This is one tool in the toolbox that can help us to get to that place.
Right on. Right on. And, you know, have been following this sort of through the Clear Roads process. You know, I think there's been some excellent work done. And I'm so glad to see that we've finally got it in as a test method. And, you know, like I say, I just think there's so much opportunity for agencies to develop their portfolio, if you will, develop their toolbox and be able to quantify when somebody comes to them and says, you know, hey, we've got this new product. I think it'll work good for you, to be able to say, here's how well it works, you know?
Yes, agreed.
Jasmine, Mike, thanks so much for sitting down with me this morning and visiting about this test method and de-icing chemicals. I really, really enjoyed the conversation.
Same, Rick. Thank you.
Thanks, Rick.
If you like this episode, share it with your colleagues. And while you're at it, click subscribe on your favorite podcast app. You can sign up to get all the Talkin' Winter Ops news direct to your inbox by subscribing at subscribe.talkinwinterops.org. Sign up today so you can get all the news firsthand. You can find us on Facebook and Instagram at TalkinWO. This podcast is possible because there are state departments of transportation across the nation that make a voluntary contribution to support AASHTO's Winter Weather Management Technical Service Program, formerly known as PSYCOP. It's because of their support, Talkin' Winter Ops, and all the other resources we provide are there to help you achieve your winter maintenance mission. Until next time, thanks for tuning in and stay safe out there.